Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Padam Tribhuvanokritstam Krishtam Jigo Jigisho Saduvartmame Bruhyasmat Pitrabir Brahman Anyair Api Okay. Anadishtitam Padam Tribhuvanot Krishtam Jigisho Saduvartmame Bruhyasmat Pitrabir Brahman Anyair Apyandadishtitam Padam Position. Tri Bhuvana, the three worlds. Ut Krishtam, the best. Jigishoho, desirous. Sadhu, honest. Vartma, way. Me, unto me. Brohi, please tell. Asmat, our. Pitribihi, by the forefathers. The father and grandfather. Brahman, O great Brahmana. Anyai, by others. Api, even. Anadhishtitam, not acquired. Listen to this. O learned Brahmana, I want to occupy a position more exalted than any yet achieved within the three material worlds by anyone, even my father and grandfathers. 6-year-old boy. If you will oblige, kindly advise me of an honest path to follow by which I can achieve the goal of my life. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Now, as you're listening to this, listen to Prabhupada's purport where he's explaining the principle of moving from sakam bhakti, that's like, you know, us, we have some material desires, to the position where we're free from material desire. The principle that's involved. Especially when there's a little reluctance to like take shelter of transcendental knowledge and stop thinking ourselves in terms of the body and, you know, all those transcendental things. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. When Dhruva Maharaj refused to accept the brahminical instruction of Narada Muni, naturally the next question would be what sort of instruction he wanted. So even before Narada Muni asked, Dhruva Maharaj expressed his heartfelt desire. His father, of course, was the emperor of the entire world. And his grandfather, Lord Brahma, was the creator of the universe. Dhruva Maharaj, little boy, expressed a desire to possess a kingdom better than those of his father and grandfather. He frankly stated that he wanted a kingdom which had no competitor within the three worlds, namely the higher, middle, and lower planetary systems. The greatest personality within this universe is Lord Brahma. Dhruva Maharaj wanted a position even greater than his. 6-year-old boy. He wanted to take advantage of Narada Muni's presence because he knew very well that if Narada Muni, the greatest devotee of Lord Krishna, could bless him or show him the path, then certainly he would be able to occupy a more exalted position than any person within the three worlds. Thus he wanted help from Narada Ji to achieve that position. Dhruva Maharaj wanted a position greater than that of Brahma. This is practically an impossible proposition. But by pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a devotee can achieve even the impossible. And he did. One particular point mentioned here is that Dhruva Maharaj wanted to occupy an exalted position, not by hook or by crook, but by honest means. This indicates that if Krishna offered him such a position, then he would accept it. This is the paragraph. How Sakama bhaktas can approach purity even they have impurity. That is, by honest means, this indicates that if Krishna offered him such a position, then he would accept it. That means he wouldn't go about it otherwise. That is the nature of a devotee. He may desire material gain. Sakama. But he accepts it only if Krishna offers it. Lord Chaitanya is Nadanam, Najanam, Nasundarim. Dhruva is I want, I want, I want. If Krishna offers it, how can I get there? Dhruva was sorry to refuse the instruction of Narada Muni. Therefore, he requested him to be merciful to him by showing a path by which he could fulfill his mind's desires. Because after all, it wasn't the soul that was injured. It wasn't the body that was injured by Suruchi's words. It was his mind. And the mind is the repository, the resting place, the vessel in which desires are carried. And he didn't want to empty that vessel. So then he had to deal with what was in there. The mind. And fulfilling the mind's desire, separate from what the indication of Narada was, which can be taken as the indication of what Krishna wanted, he refused because of holding on to that desire within his mind. Okay, does that mean that such a person is not eligible for devotional service? Such a person is eligible for devotional service. And then they're critical is the standard by which that person is eligible for devotional service, where it's not the same as karma yoga, it's bhakti yoga. Sakam, there's sakam karma yoga and sakam bhakti yoga. So what's the difference? A very crude way of making a distinction between bhakti yoga and karma yoga is in karma yoga, there's the motivation is I want to become free from the bondage of my fruitive work. I'm interested in fruitive work, and I'm disinterested, or I'd like to become free from the bondage of that fruitive work. And so I'll make the motivation is I make an offering or sacrifice unto the Supreme so I can enjoy fruitive work, but be less entangled than the fruitive worker, a karmi, and become elevated to the karma yogi position, where at least some of the fruits are offered in sacrifice unto the Supreme. Or take a little higher. I just like working for the Supreme. So that's the Yad Karoshi, Yad Asnasi, Yad Jahosi, Dadasi, Yad. It's a nice verse from Bhagavad Gita. And in the discussion between Lord Chaitanya and Ramananda Roy, Lord Chaitanya rejected that as external, because it's external because it's an act where the heart may not be fully connected with the Supreme, and commonly it's not. Where I want to engage in fruitive activity, and I want to minimize the bondage of that fruitive activity. So it's a utilitarian program where I make a little deposit over here and I get back interest in that deposit. But the Supreme Lord is in the picture, as opposed to the Supreme Lord is not in the picture. When I was becoming a devotee, I didn't know Bhagavad Gita. Like, you know, a little bit understand Bhagavad Gita now. But I saw an example of what was karma yoga that made it really clear what karma yoga was. Or at least karma palatyag, one was detached from the fruits of work. In the course of my travels in life, I met a person who was very expert at building houses. Not just a carpenter, but he could build the plumbing and the electricity and the whole thing from A to Z. He could build houses. And he was detached. He was an entrepreneur, Vaishya. He was detached. So he had a vehicle that had all of his tools, and he was invited, he had a long invitation list, to go and build a house. And all that he required was some food to eat and gas in his car, for he could get around and get supplies. You know, his upkeep, his just, you know, not even give him money, just anyway. And he would build somebody's house. And then he was done building that house, he'd get in his vehicle and go to the next place and build somebody else's house, and it was his life. And he saw it as, this is an offering to God. Karma yoga. Detached work. There's other examples, but bhakti is where one is prepared to follow the regulations of the vidhis of sadhana bhakti, and at the same time one has a strong material desire, or a reasonable material desire, but a material desire, and a collection of them, material desires. Sakam bhakti. Now what to do? So now it's the dovetail program. It's the dovetail is I do something I like to do because I like to do it. And Krishna likes that something, and so I do it for Krishna. I just combine what I like and what Krishna likes, and it's a nice relationship. My primary intention is not simply to please Krishna, whatever Krishna likes. It's what I like and what Krishna likes, and if that's it's a nice match, then, and if I don't like, even if Krishna likes, you know, it doesn't happen. Or if it happens, it's begrudgingly. Oh, I've got to do what Krishna likes. So, in the standard of sakam bhakti is, that's being presented here, is if Krishna so desires, then I'll accept that which I desire, but only if Krishna desires it. And the term that's used in the verse is sadhu. And Prabhupada has chosen to translate that as honest. And in contrast, it's by hook or by crook, or dishonest. A similar term in a different circumstance that's used is the penance of Lord Brahma when he heard the words tapa, tapa, tapa. He was searching, he was born on this lotus flower, and it was completely dark in all directions. There was nothing. There was darkness and the lotus flower and himself. And he wanted, because he's very intelligent, he wanted to understand, where have I come from? Who am I? What's going on? What's it all about? What am I supposed to do? We may have some circumstances that are a little challenging, but nothing like that. He didn't, whine and complain and, feel lonely and all that stuff. He began inquiring. And he, being intelligent, he said, there's a lotus flower. Must be a lotus stem underneath the lotus flower. And if I just follow that stem down and down and down and down, I'll find out where the stem came from, where the lotus came from, where I came from. Deductive logic. So he climbed down the stem. And as far as he climbed, he couldn't find the end to it. Then he realized, whoops, that's not going to work. And then he heard tapa, so he engaged in austerity, back up on top of the lotus and engaged in tapa, tapasya. After 1,000 celestial years of tapa, because what else are you going to do if there's nothing? Now, we sit and have difficulty chanting 16 rounds. The counting game, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls it. Anyway, 1,000 celestial years. Then Lord Vishnu appeared and said, because not only Vishnu, that meant the whole spiritual world manifested directly before him. And the Lord said, because you have pleased me by your non-deceptive penance, same, from the Lord's side to Brahma, this is from Dhruva to Narada, but this is the same import, the same connect. Honest, or non-deceptive. So the purpose of Brahma had a material desire. It's described very clearly in Sri Brahma Samhita. Even after his realization, he was invested by the Supreme Lord with this desire to create And he didn't only have a desire to create, like we might have a desire to create, you know, like Prahlad might have a desire to create a picture. And we might have a desire to create a garden. Somebody else might have a desire to create a temple. Someone else may have a desire to create a software program. Someone else may have a desire to do something, to create something. He had a desire to create a universe. I mean, who can even think of a universe? We're so tiny. But he had that capacity, and that was his desire. And it was invested in him by the Supreme Lord. Prior to the creating of the universe was this penance, so that his heart could become free from anything that's separate from the Lord's interest. And even after the Lord granted him his benediction, his prayer was that when I start creating this universe, let me not think of myself as the creator of the universe, but rather one who is carrying out the will of you, the Supreme Lord, as the instrument of your will. That's my benediction. Let me not be implicated in false ego, thinking I am the doer, I am the creator, I am Brahma. Let me become free from that mentality, and simply because it is your desire. Now this is Nishkam, comes to that position. Sakam comes to pure because of that full shelter. So because of that desire of Dhruva, Padam Tribhovanot Krishtam Jigisho Sadhu Vartmame. Vartma means path. Please show unto me the path that is honest, where it's not just, you know, some austerity and I'm just, it's a business deal. I do this austerity, you give me what I want. Let's shake on that one. I have a little contract. That's not what he's asking for. If the Lord Vishnu, because his mother said Lord Vishnu, so if Lord Vishnu so desires, show me the path by which this desire can be fulfilled. That's the starting position of going from Sakam Bhakti to Nishkam Bhakti. Well, supposing we're not there. Supposing we got this contractual mentality that says, I'll do this provided you do that. Well, we're going to find unsteadiness in our devotion. Sometimes we're very enthusiastic. Sometimes we're complacent. Sometimes we're disturbed. Sometimes we're this. Sometimes we're that. So the regulations of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti are to help bring us to that Krishna, if you so desire, position. To the bhakti position, instead of the, in Prahlad Maharaj's language, vanik seva. Those of you from India, you know what that term means, vanik. Business. Business seva. Prahlad Maharaj, he's on nishkam, he's shuddha bhakti. There's no business deal. I've done something, now you're going to give me a benediction, and so I'm very happy to get the benediction. He's in this nishkam status. But even with a sakam, if you desire only, then kindly fulfill my desire. That's bhakti. That's a relationship that's not entrepreneurial in relation to Krishna. That's the starting position of Dhruva. And if in our own position, We can take stock of what our desires are and then say to Krishna, or if we can honestly say to Krishna, if you so, like following in the footsteps of Dhruva, if you so desire, my dear Lord Krishna, I have this concern, I have this desire, I have this unfulfilled hope. In the prayer during the Japa retreat, or during the festival of the Holy Name, excuse me, I read several times this nice rendering of Shikshastakam number 5 by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And in that rendering, it's a paraphrasing, expanded paraphrase of Ainanda Tanuja Kinkaram. Bhaktivinoda Thakur compares the material existence to be like a vast ocean. And we're tossed into the middle of the ocean. No chance of getting to either shore. And in that ocean are fierce, predatorial fish in the form of material desires ready to devour us. And there's big waves, waves of hopes, he uses that phrase, hopes. I have an expectation for something that is my idea of what happiness is. And I'm being tossed around by those waves of my hopes. So what's life like if you don't have hopes? There's no question, repeatedly Prabhupada would teach, there's no question of becoming free from desire in an absolute sense of, because the soul, in his pure and healthy and natural state, has desires in relation to Krishna, has love for Krishna. So the state where the ocean is pacific, pacified, where the mind is pacified, is where there's only spiritual desire. And we read what that is. One who is ready to sacrifice anything to satisfy the Supreme Lord can be said to have spiritual desire. Dhruva wasn't there. We may not be there, but if we aspire for that, it's critical, this little section. If we aspire for that and follow the path given by Rupa Goswami, if we're Rupanugas, because the path given by Rupa Goswami is the path of Lord Chaitanya. And the path of Lord Chaitanya is the gift of pure love of God, Krishna Prema Pradayate. So we may have that desire. We're not at the spiritual desire state. We have material desire. But we follow the vidhis of sadhana bhakti and will carry us to that position where those desires that have arisen from our rebellious spirit and are false and are factually tormenting of the real happiness of the soul can be relieved. By careful following of the vidhis of sadhana bhakti, it will help us to access the pure holy name, which is meant not just to fulfill material desire, but to take us to that desireless position, to the spiritual desire position, to desire simply service to Krishna, whatever Krishna wants. So our program is chanting the pure holy name of Krishna. We're not there, but we're practicing the vidhis to get us there so that Krishna shall be pleased. And our relationship of service unto Krishna in the practicing stage, in the intermediate stage, in the mature stage becomes simply for the pleasure of Krishna. Now, in that intermediate range, what about those material desires? Okay, we can just talk like they're not there, but what if they're there? And in fact, they're there. So what do we do with those things, material desires? There's a menu. According to our position, we can identify which is most suitable for us. Dhruva's selecting one. It's, you know, I'm not capable of this brahminical instruction. I'm not capable of taking shelter of transcendental knowledge and residing there. I've got this strong desire. In fact, it's so strong, it's ridiculous. Or it's impossible. Let's go through it again. Dhruva Maharaja's father is Uttanapada. Uttanapada was the emperor of the world. The world. And above him, his father, Uttanapada's father, was Swayambhuva Manu. And Swayambhuva Manu, who does Manu rule over? The whole universe. And his father, Swayambhuva Manu, is a direct son of Lord Brahma. He's the creator of the universe, which Swayambhuva Manu rules over, and his son Uttanapada is ruling over earth. He wants a kingdom superior to the universe. What's that? It's the kingdom of God. He wants to rule the kingdom of God. Little boy. There, Dhruva. That's cute. But he meant it. And in the end, when Vishnu comes and speaks with him, he says that we're holding a place for you there, just waiting for you to go there. The throne is vacant, waiting for you to go there. Huh? It's a service. It's not like, oh, I'm king. In that realm, there's no false ego. It's a service. So come down and, you know, well, we're doing service. We have material desires. And our material desires are being fulfilled through the medium of some service. And we're trying through that to come to the position where only Krishna. Again, referring to the talks between Ramananda Roy and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Madhyalila Chapter 8, beautiful, very elevated discussion. Lord Chaitanya begins the conversation. Think about having a conversation that begins like this. What's the goal of life and the means to attain it? Let's start from there. Nice to meet you, Ramananda Roy. Please tell me, what's the goal of life and how to attain it? And he goes through a series of verses. One of them is the Karma Yoga verse. Yad Karoshi, yad Asana. Even Sarva Dharmam Paridyajaman, Lord Chaitanya says that's external, go further. So the one that he accepts is Lord Brahma speaking to Krishna after stealing the calves and the cowherd boys and describing what the platform of devotional service is, where there's no desire for speculative knowledge. One stays in one's position, one doesn't have to give up activity, but one cultivates bhakti by the process of hearing, casting far away the desires for liberation and material elevation. Just hearing, becoming purified by that process of hearing. Lord Chaitanya accepts that one and says, speak something more. The something more is what spiritual desire is. He speaks first of the rasa of neutrality and then the rasa of servitorship. which is what's in this verse, which is what Narada is advocating. Actually, he's advocating it indirectly. It's get off the bodily platform, get onto your spirit soul platform, and tolerate duality. Same as Krishna advises in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Narada's advising. But where does that lead to? It leads to don't act on material desire. Okay, so you come down and you act on material desire. Now you go up and you don't act on material desire because material desire doesn't exist anymore. It's just Krishna, what Krishna wants. The example from Nectar of Devotion is Pradyumna, the son of Krishna. His relationship with Krishna was, as son, it's servant of the father. So the teaching is, if Pradyumna wanted something, but came to know that Krishna didn't want that something, he gave up that desire. Huh? He gave up the desire. And if Pradyumna didn't want something, but he learned that Krishna wanted something, he wanted that something. He did that something. Not, it's not my nature. He did that something because Krishna wanted that something. And that's the platform of dasya rasa, a spiritual desire. Or in Christianity, it's let thy will be mine. As soon as I find out the indication of thy will, that's my will. That's love. On that platform of love, the Supreme Lord also knows what is our desire. Because even Pradyumna had desire, spiritual desire. But sometimes Krishna would say, don't do that. And it was done. It was consummated because Krishna said, don't do that. Do this instead. That's, on our level, that's called discipline. On the transcendental level, it's called love. How do you go from the platform where you need discipline to the platform where all there is love? It's by the vidhis of sadhana bhakti and a strong relationship with a Narada Muni personality. Someone that's representing Krishna and can carry one there, unless you're Lord Brahma and Krishna comes directly before you. And you still have a desire, and he explains how to become free from that material desire. Or, as it says in Sri Brahma Samhita, text 61, very important verse, Brahma wants to know, I've got this desire. And if I act on this desire to create a universe, I may become implicated in forgetfulness of you. And the Supreme Lord says, you combine this act of creating with the regulations of bhakti, and it will serve to elevate you as much as any direct spiritual activity, your universe creating program. The material desire becomes a spiritual desire because it's something that Krishna wants, and one acts in that capacity. But now there's the other side. What if Krishna doesn't want? Then it's okay. Krishna doesn't want. It's okay. That's when one has spiritual desire. You're still an individual. We're not a stone. We're not neutral. We have desire. Let thy will be mine. At least aspiring to come to that stage, especially in our case, following Rupa Goswami's teachings, we can get there. Dhruva didn't have Rupa Goswami's teachings. But he had Narada, and he was saying, give me something else besides those elevated teachings. But one more time, I'll read the paragraph again. One particular point mentioned here is that Dhruva Maharaj wanted to occupy an exalted position not by hook or crook, but by honest means, sadhu vartma me. This indicates that if Krishna offered him such a position, then he would accept it. That is the nature of a devotee. He may desire material gain, but he accepts it only if Krishna offers it. Dhruva was sorry to refuse the instruction of Narada Muni. Therefore, he requested him to be merciful to him by showing a path by which he could fulfill his mind's desire. The teachings are very clear. As long as mind holds desire, we're going to see the world colored by that desire. I had this interesting experience once, a small little realization. I was ...1974, I think it was, I was assigned, not assigned, I came to Chicago to engage in book distribution in the Chicago airport. And it was a very interesting experience. And after the Christmas marathon was over, we had a kind of like a airport distributor brainstorming session, and the Puerto Rico airport had just been legalized for book distribution, and it's still legal for book distribution. So I was, along with Gajahanta, I was given the assignment, go to Puerto Rico and very carefully do your book distribution so we don't agitate the authorities, but you know, we distribute Prabhupada's books in Puerto Rico. I didn't speak Spanish, and most of the people besides the tourists speak Spanish, so I had to learn enough Spanish to distribute books. And by staying there, we found that there are certain times of the year that it was more busy and less busy. So when we were doing book distribution when it was less busy, we got the inspiration to go to some of the islands and distribute books over there. And that was a nice plan. We had a great time. We distributed a lot of books. Remember one place, there was a shopping mall kind of like central, right in the middle of the island, so all the people of the island can go there. And we met a lot of people that we never would have met anywhere just by going to that parking lot. And the security didn't give us a hard time because they never saw anything like that before. Anyway, we just freely roamed about the parking lot all day long in the hot sun and distributed books. It was really nice. But while going and returning, we got on this seaplane. You know, the pontoon and, you know, right from the water. That was the landing strip, the takeoff launching pad. And as we were flying, looking out the window, there's an island and there's an island. And I was noticing one of them over there, that's a military base. And then one over there, that's a cash crop place, you know, sugar cane production. And one over there is a tourist place. And now how did they become a military base or a sugar cane base or a tourist place? It's somebody saw, oh hey, look at that island, that'd make a good blah blah blah. And someone else with another desire said, oh, look at that, they make a good blah, blah, blah. Just based upon the desire in the heart of somebody with some means, it became different because of the desire in their heart. According to the desire in their heart, they saw a certain way. We see the world according to the desires in our heart. So what's it like to see the world when you don't have material desires. You see things as Krishna sees things. That's what scripture is, to see things as Krishna sees them. And by studying scripture, at least it gives us an idea how Krishna sees things. And it can, if we follow the teachings and apply them and the practices that purify our heart, we can come to that position too. So things don't cause us grief or joy in the material sense. Rather, here's an opportunity for service. Here's another opportunity for service. Here's another opportunity for service. Krishna's giving me an opportunity for service in this way, or that way, or another way. It's a nice way to look at life, as opposed to, you know, it pleases me, it displeases me. I like it, I don't like it. Service to Krishna. We may not have a clear idea how Krishna wants us to serve in this circumstance, that circumstance. But that's part of the joy of our relationship with Krishna, trying to understand what Krishna's indication is, and our acharyas to assist us, and our prayers, and the whole process of bhakti to come to that position. So here's Dhruva. His stepmother's insulted him. He's only seeing one thing. He can't receive transcendental teachings. He's feeling very regretful. But he's saying, I can't. Prabhupada's statement is, cannot is a word in a fool's dictionary. Cannot means I will not. And if conversely is if I will, if by pleasing the Supreme Personality of God, a devotee can achieve even the impossible. So if the impossible was to get to preside over a spiritual planet, I mean, how impossible is that? And it happened. So conversely, how impossible is it to overcome a material desire? It's not impossible. Unless I say it's impossible. I cannot. But if there's a strong desire, the impossible becomes possible. And one who has faith in this process of devotional service, it's possible. Really? It's possible? Yeah, it's possible. Then we can make a choice from the menu. Oh, it's not possible. Is one of the choices. And then we're looking for another choice. At least the option that next down option that's being given by Dhruva Maharaj is, if Lord Vishnu so desires, please show me the path and the honest means, not deceptive means, where I can get the favor of Lord Vishnu and he can give me that kingdom. So I can fulfill my desire. So Narada did. To be continued. Any discussion? Yes?
On that principle of let thy will be mine, we also hear the terms self-abandonment, or sometimes we do things without fully understanding, or there is some sort of pressure, or some whatever reason we do things just because it's motivated by something other than fully let thy will be mine.
Sure. It happens all the time.
Exactly. And so the question is there purification when one acts in that way?
Sure. No hesitation. Sure.
Yeah. So then, why not continue?
It depends on whether one can sustain and in fact continue. But there's certainly purification and there's no loss. Prabhupada spoke about that regularly. Out of sentiment. I was sitting in a room and Prabhupada was saying it openly. Out of sentiment. Many persons come and they engage in devotional service and there's no loss. There's gain. And some come and some go. And he was saying, some of you are here today and you're gone tomorrow. I know that very well. That's okay. No harm, no loss, no problem. Then he was specifically saying, and initiation is for those who are sincere. They actually stay with the process because it's not just out of sentiment. They want. They've understood and they want and they continue. So, even if one doesn't continue, there's purification, there's spiritual benefit, there's gain. You know, what's preferred than starting is to start, excuse me, starting and stopping, what's preferred is to start and continue. So that which one can sustain, that's where honesty comes in. But with that honesty, an operative principle should be always, let me take that next step. What's a sustainable step becomes the question, but let me take the next step. And I do that with guidance, and I do that with self-evaluation and so on. People that know me very well, I take their input, but I make a decision and make a step because I want to get to Krishna. It can work. It's a double-edged thing. I can say, well, I just have to be honest, Prabhu, and I'm not being honest. That the honest position is I don't really want to go to Krishna. I'd rather be complacent. Perhaps, that's honesty. It's not necessarily good, but it's okay. But don't just say, say something when, you're just covering up, even to your own self, what the real situation is. And then we take responsibility for that kind of decision making. I want to stay right where I am. That means I want to go backwards.
Yeah.
But if I can say, I want to take another step, but I want to do it in such a way that it's sustainable, so I'm going to consolidate here, I'm going to get some strength before I take that next step. Prabhupada did like that. The instruction of my Guru Maharaj is there. Let me prepare myself to take that step, go to the Western countries. And he honestly admitted that there was some reservation on his side. How can I do this? Because to do that, he understood the risk that was involved. It was life risk. Anyway, extreme challenge, but it's full dependence. One can, as much as we have a sense of descending mercy coming, it gives us added strength to take a step. That on my own, I don't have the capacity. Honestly, I don't have the capacity. But with descending mercy, then comes capacity. So it's a combination of what's the resource inside and what's the access to mercy outside and the relationship with those that are ready to give mercy. Okay.
Okay, may I follow up question?
Yeah.
So when, the next sustainable step may be indicated by, you said, those who are guiding us. But in our heart or, in the devotee's heart, we might feel, I don't think that's an honest, sustainable step. And so there's this...
Express that. Then want you to express that. And, you know, together, one can look at that. And there may be, you know, any number of outcomes of together looking at that.
Because I sometimes struggle, I see devotees who I, and I'm sure in my case also it's valid, the next possible step is smaller, seems very reasonable, but in the either the guise of or just that's where their clarity is, they just say, this is all I can do, I cannot take a step further. I guess I'm sure I'm...
Well, if that position, my response is, if that position is you know, an end conclusion, an honest end conclusion, still within my heart should be the desire, I'd like to take that next step, whatever that next step is. It may not even be the one that we're talking about, but I'd like to take the next step. I don't want to stagnate. I want to move towards Krishna. Whatever that might be, that's my desire. And let the indication become more clear what that next step that sustainable is. And until it's clear and until I feel the capacity to do so, I'm going to continue to cultivate that desire to take that next step and to get the indication what it is and to be ready to do it. Complacency is not part of the program. Complacency is tacit and implicit inviting Maya. You don't have to... One lecture that I attended, Srila Prabhupada speaking, it's not that we have to invite Maya. We interrupt our devotional service, the flow of devotional service. You know, the thought that's common, Prabhupada was explaining, is sankalpa vikalpa, the mind. When the mind rules, the mind may say, I've worked very hard, now I deserve a little vacation. As soon as that thought enters, it's not like we then have to say, Maya, can you come for a moment? Immediately Maya, you don't have to ask. Immediately Maya is there, engaging us. Immediately. So it's binary. We're either consciously striving, and even I may not be clear what that next step. I want to be continuous striving. Not Prabhupada's phrase is rest on my laurels. I've worked very hard. I deserve a break. What's that? It's the mentality of the fruitive worker. I work so many days and I need a vacation. It's just part of material psychology, and so we have that program. Now, for sustainability, I may very well need some downtime, but the downtime is not, you know, vacation from devotional service. It's rejuvenating. It's part of devotional service. Hearing, chanting, whatever it might be, some exercise or something or something or something, so that I can increase my capacity to take the next step. It's all in devotional service. It's not a break from devotional service. And then Maya can't touch you.
You were explaining about this point of the mind's desires. My question is a question, I think it comes in the Bhagavatam with Uddhava. The soul is transcendental, so it cannot suffer and enjoy, and the body is dead, so it doesn't suffer and enjoy.
We're speaking Uddhava Gita, the Avanti Brahman story?
Something, I don't remember the context. I just remember reading this question. Where is the suffering and enjoyment coming from? If the soul is transcendental and the body is dead matter.
Okay.
And is it produced within the mind? And if that is the case, how do we overcome that?
Did you all catch what he's asking? Not at all. There's a question in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam where a devotee of Krishna, Uddhava, asks Krishna, what's the root cause of suffering? Krishna says, very good question. To answer your question, let me tell you a story. And it's a true story. And he tells the story. The punchline of the story is, suffering is within the mind. It's due to the mental makeup that one sees this situation as enjoyment and another sees this situation as suffering. It's the mind. So your question is how to free the mind from that condition so that there's suffering. And it's cleanse the mind of material desire. Material desire. This material desire means separate from Krishna desire. And transform that into that thy will be mine. Spiritual desire. And then there's a sadhana for that, and there's vidhis for that sadhana. There's regulations, how to. And there's teachings to help us, guide us along the way. And there's teachers, and there's all kinds of resources. But it's a procedure of releasing the mind, mantra, release the mind from other than desire in relation to Krishna. And then let my mind's desire be whatever is Krishna's desire. And let me act upon that in practical ways. That's devotional service. We practice devotional service behind the cart. The horse that's pulling the cart is the Hare Krishna mantra. And the cart is our devotional service. It's, you know, carrying the load of our senses, our mind, our intelligence. It's the mantra. The mind that's the cleansed consciousness that says, I simply want to serve Krishna. Please accept me again in that realm of your devotional service. And then we do devotional service. Then the mind is no longer bringing misery. Down to, according to Lord Kapila Dev's teaching, by the process of bhakti, the material mind dissolves. And not by any other process. What a relief, huh? I mean, just think about that. Use your mind for a moment to think about not having a material mind anymore. The mind is going, oh, no. And we're going, oh, yes. And there's a struggle. But there's a spiritual mind. When there's still desire, there's still thought, there's still joy, there's feelings in relation to Krishna and relation to spirit souls. We don't like obliterate everybody else. It's just me and Krishna. Other souls and deep feelings for other souls. They're part of Krishna, part and parcel. Anything on the ladies' side? Yes? We're going to need a microphone for you.
It seems that in the Dasya Rasa that you were talking about, the challenge is really discerning Krishna's will, because I feel like once that becomes clear, it's actually in your interest to give it up if it's not Krishna's will. It's in your interest to give up your own desires if they're not Krishna's desires, because Krishna always like has something even better in mind for you.
I didn't catch all of what you said, but let me say back what I thought you said.
But the question is,
how do we know what's Krishna's desire?
It just seems like that's the biggest challenge, because once you figure out what is or what isn't...
Let me respond this way. What we accept as authority in conditional life is the mind. And the mind tells us whatever we accept in life. Like, you know, in this case, this is Krishna's desire. But we know, a priori, our mind is contaminated. Our mind is conditioned. Our mind is, you know, been hanging out in the material world too long, and it's not the right resource to rely upon. But our conditioning is also very strong. If what we hear doesn't match with what our mind says, we don't accept it. We're stuck. Not stuck. Looks like stuck. Because there's a cleansing process. And the cleansing process requires accepting descending mercy. So what's that conduit through which we accept descending mercy? And how strong is our relationship with and faith in that conduit for descending mercy? That little paragraph will determine how closely you can understand Krishna's will. Or not. We'll go back now. The tendency is to accept the dictations of the mind. We're just like, you know, we can't help it. We're habituated. We hear with that filter. And we don't necessarily trust some other authority besides the mind. Because for all good reasons, we've been cheated. You know, they're misleaders. And besides, I'm rebellious. It's just, those are facts. I've been cheated. This is a contaminating atmosphere. How do I have the capacity to discern a cheater from a non-cheater? I don't even trust myself in terms of that. And besides, I'm rebellious. I'm in the material world because of that rebellion. So we can, you know, cry like a baby. What do I do? Or we can do the best, you know, trust in, ultimately it's trust in Krishna, that Krishna, let me show you my sincere most desire, and you please be merciful. That much we must trust. Krishna, please guide me to that source that I can understand your desire better. One thing, for at least for members of ISKCON, is Prabhupada's books are that pristine source that we can trust. Now back to, I have this mind, and even reading the pristine source, it's going through this filter called the mind. Benjamin Franklin wrote when he was a teenager, "My friend and I read the Bible day and night. He reads black and I read white." Same source, pristine source. One reads this, the other reads that. Diametrically opposite conclusions. So you're right that the essence is to know what is Krishna's will, But the big obstacle may not be I don't know what Krishna's will is. It's rather, I want my will to be thine. And letting go of that one can be the bigger problem. Because if there's a very sincere desire to know what is Krishna's will, Krishna doesn't have a problem disclosing it. He's certainly very capable also. So now, what to do? Chant purely. Start. That's a starting point. That's a challenge in itself. Chant without offense. Chant with full attention on the holy name. You know, the mind's business, one of the things that we covered in our Festival of the Holy Name discussion, and you had to miss because of some other obligations, you can listen. There's this stage where when there is absorption, there's instruction to neglect the mind. And when there is absorption in the holy name, that's what's going on. The mind is not ruling anymore. It's your relationship with Krishna, your connection with Krishna through Nama Prabhu. It's very strong. And the mind is not ruling. It's involved in the process of paying attention to Krishna. But it's the will to be with Krishna that's prevailing. That's refreshing. And it leads to taste. So, start with that. Strive for offenseless chanting, and something will become very clear, very quickly. And that is, I can't do this alone. Humility. That's a nice place too. I require mercy. And Krishna will send it. And then in that humble space, when Krishna sends mercy, you'll recognize it. And that's where the trust in Krishna and the resource that Krishna is sending your way align. And it's a relationship with Krishna. It's not like there's somebody, you know, standing in the way, an intermediary. Protestantism is based upon rejecting that idea. There must be somebody between me and God. It's just me and God. And our Vaishnava teaching is, it's not an intermediary, but it's a transparent medium. And that's very nice. Prabhupada gives the example of eyeglasses, where with my seeing capacity, you know, I can't focus on an object that's at a distance. But with glasses, then I can focus. But the seeing isn't indirect, it's direct through the transparent medium. So when there's a transparent medium, the object, Krishna, becomes clearly focused. That resource, that similarly, when Krishna is sending some resource to help one go to him, it's very clear. It's transparent. And then you can take that step and through that resource better understand Krishna's will. Okay. We gotta go. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.